Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today. Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology here on WMR.fm. It's the 23rd of April, 2026. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls.
Hi everybody.
It's been a completely action-packed week, especially on the AI's front. Before jumping into the show, just really, really quickly, Christine, this is the 8th year anniversary of a terrorist attack in my neighborhood. So just a shout out to all the people of Willowdale. Willowdale, strong and huge love, folks. 8 years ago, an incel-inspired terrorist attack happened on Yonge Street in the north end of Toronto. It was a particularly traumatic day, and still is. Shout out to everyone in Willowdale, and love to the families of the 11 people who died 8 years ago today. Okay, so starting OpenAI, they have an ad bot. They've mentioned the name of it as OAI ads bot. So if you see it in your logs, openai.com/adbot, it's OpenAI's ads bot.
Well, what it does,
yep.
Yeah, this is some search engine roundtable. So basically, OpenAI describes the tool as OAI-AdsBot is used to validate the safety of web pages submitted as ads on ChatGPT. When you submit an ad, OpenAI may visit the landing page to ensure it complies with our policies. We may also use content from the landing page to determine which is when it's most relevant to show the ads to users. And OAI-AdsBot only visits pages submitted as ads, and data collected by the bot is not used to train generative AI foundation models.
Validates that the ad's landing page is actually a safe page and not installing malware or anything. It checks that the landing page complies with OpenAI policies and reviews the content on the landing page to make sure that it's actually the content you say it is.
Exactly.
Okay, if you found
it
a
wouldn't
bug
be
in...
a week without a bug. Sure.
It wouldn't be a week indeed. So job performance listings reporting bug. Jobs listings have their own specific schema. If you have job listings up on your site and you're using the schema correctly, you'll see it appear in Search Console. But Search Console is having a bug with that performance report, and it's showing zero impressions and clicks since the 16th of this month.
Yes, it's just a logging error, though. So when they fix this issue, they'll restore the data. It should be there. So, yeah, another debug, another day, another week.
Well, that one's actually, I was working with a company that was on a recruiting drive just a few months ago. And this is actually a big deal because that was one of the metrics they wanted reported over and over and over again. So,
it's never fun when your data is down. But it is kind of funny. There's a bug every week.
Landing pages in Google Analytics 4 is probably your best bet to deal with that missing data.
Yeah, very true.
Okay. Google Ads has a new API version. V24 was released. It's got a whole bunch of updates, including changes to Demand Gen, travel feeds, conversion types, shopping, reporting, videos, and a whole bunch more.
And I always find it funny if you go to Search Engine Roundtable to read this, because you definitely need to look up all the information here at Google or there, that he always puts the release, the number of releases. So it's like, before there was 23.2 in March, and then 23.1 in February, and then 23 at the end of January, and then 23.2 on October 15th, and blah, 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 blah. Always always funny. So if you need the history of when every one of these updates happened, you can find it on Search Engine Roundtable.
Well, it's good to know what the updates
It
happen
is good.
and
Yeah.
did, because if something breaks.
It's just cute because he doesn't do it on anything else but the that release. So it's funny when you read the article.
Okay, a bunch of stuff happened around Anthropic this week. So, if you remember in the last couple of weeks, Anthropic started teasing this extraordinarily powerful version of its AI called Mythos. It then l limited the release of Mythos to a tiny, tiny number of very large software houses because Mythos was so powerful. It was effectively capable of breaking encryption, breaking passwords, breaking into virtually any system. It was a skeleton key for the web. It's like evil villain territory stuff. So Anthropic decided to limit the release of it.
Yeah,
Sometime in the last week it got out, like it leaked.
that was, yeah, that was last
That is
week.
true. We know that that nefarious a nefarious group now has access to it. We don't know who that group is.
Well, they can
Is
you
all of
hear
that
me?
true so far?
You hear me? So the way that they broke in though was quite funny. I mean, not funny, haha, just ironic. They were using Discord and Roblox, and they reconstructed Anthropic's naming conventions. This is from Yahoo News, using data exposed in the Mercury breach 3 weeks ago, or 3 weeks earlier, prior to when they did it. So they were able to use that to guess a URL for an Anthropic vendor, and the group had legitimate evaluation credentials through contract work for the vendor. So anyways, those credentials combined with the guest URL granted the group ongoing access. And they've been running Mythos regularly since gaining entry. And the reason that is really scary is because what Jim just said about Mythos and how it can like very quickly go, it found like 20,000, I think it was, 0 day vulnerabilities overnight. And then of course it can use its skills to try to enter the spaces they're trying to get into. So it is now out there and it's being used currently. I don't know that there's any major breaches that have been reported so far, but they also may just be playing with it while they're trying to figure out what it can do. And it's said that I don't think anything else. They just said they've been using it regularly and they have avoided cybersecurity related prompts and instead use benign tasks like building websites. So
Okay, so the long and short of it is this extraordinarily powerful innovation around Anthropic's large language model version Mythos is scaring the heck out of security experts. In another story, actually interesting, other security experts, this has allowed them to do their job a lot faster. Scaring the White House into actually making a deal with Anthropic around Mythos and the
maybe
Department of Defense.
it's like Trump said there might be a deal coming, but
That's that sign that the president is scared of something. Whenever Trump starts waving his arms and saying this might happen, he's usually forestalling some disaster he sees coming around the corner.
So Trump basically has decided now, of course, we've covered a story. Like 2 months ago, was it? Right after things happened, where people that used Anthropic internally at DoD weren't giving it up, refusing to stop using it. Well, now
Well,
it seems that, what's that?
okay. So a couple of months ago, Trump got in a, or the Trump administration got in a fight with Anthropic because Anthropic wanted to limit the way that Trump would use its models. Trump said it was a national security risk. It was supposed to be taken totally out of the supply chain. A court ruled, of course,
But
that
they
was
didn't.
illegal.
Yes, and people dragged their heels internally, so it wasn't removed. And it's so intertwined inside the DoD that it's hard to remove it anyways. So now DOJ, under Trump's instruction, went to court in California and stopped their appeal of the stoppage. So basically, Anthropic said, "Hey, you can't make us, you can't declare us that. You can't stop us from working with the government." And a court said, "That's true. Let's put it on a, you know, a stay." And now the administration has gone and told California to delay their asking to appeal the stay. I mean, delay the result of asking to appeal the stay.
So basically, there's no impediment for a deal to be made between the Department of Defense and Anthropic.
Yes, and this
And
is all based on Mythos, the Mythos activity.
since the release of Mythos, the president has basically 180'd his utter hatred for maybe he just didn't like Claude. Like,
Is it
maybe seriously,
Tuesday?
maybe Claude offended him or said something behind his back or slept with his wife or something.
Is it Tuesday?
Is it Tuesday?
Yeah, we know Taco Tuesdays.
Oh, yeah, sure. I don't think in this case that the president was chickening out, as much as an incredibly powerful tool that has found a way to use I don't know, the power of bundled agents in ways that the other tools haven't figured out how to use yet.
Yeah, so
I just think he can't not use it. It's just too powerful for him not to have his hands on.
true. In the story in Politico, it says in an 8-page filing, the DOJ asked U.S. District Judge Rita Lynn to freeze the appeal, which the DOJ launched earlier this year. I mean, this month, sorry. So a separate set of judges at the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, sorry, I can't speak today, can rule on a related set of questions regarding supply chain risks. Basically, they're pausing it, like you said, so they can make a deal with Anthropic and they can use it more ubiquitously in the government. I don't know what that does to OpenAI's deal, but OpenAI's deal, but so
Well,
that's our dive into the abyss today. But
I don't think, before we go any further, I don't think it's necessarily a zero-sum game when it comes to the large AI companies doing deals with the US government. Let's remember that one of the larger AI companies is owned and run by a guy who last year was point person in taking, well, pretty much all of the data acquired over 250 years of a US government from the US government and grokifying it somehow, like, you know, using it as training material for a special version of their AI. I don't think it's a zero-sum game here. If there's a deal with Anthropic, there won't be a deal with OpenAI. I'm
that's
pretty
true,
sure
yeah.
that the piggy trough, I should say the public trough, is open for everybody here.
Well, and yeah, because Anthropic still, so the two things Anthropic, for people who aren't in this space, that they wouldn't do would be autonomous killing and surveillance of US citizens. And right now we know that OpenAI is fine with those and are working actually on one of those projects right now if a FISA law doesn't expire and doesn't get fixed. So imagine that Anthropic, which won't do that, would be doing other things while OpenAI would be doing the things that they said they're willing to do that Anthropic won't.
Sure.
Yeah.
Who knows what uses different departments of this government will use the tools of the very people who put them in power. For given the track record, I don't think it's going to immediately or in the long term really benefit the American people.
No, I don't either. And we do know that the likelihood of the death of students in Iran was based on faulty LLM training, and that was Anthropic. So that's why I think they didn't know. They said it was being used autonomously, and that's where that big scuffle came from, was that they didn't want their stuff used autonomously, which makes a lot of sense because you know data can be old and wrong, like it was. So.
Okay, so yeah, that was our quick jump into the abyss. Not that we're gonna actually leave it for the rest of our
No,
story,
this is
because
just a
trust me, they all
sad.
tie in together somehow, except for the
Yeah.
fun Google ones. We have so much fun Google stuff coming up. It's mostly fun anyway.
Yeah,
And
but
it's coming, I swear to you, but we gotta get through a whole bunch of stuff that isn't so much fun first.
we do have a really important story. I know this one's close to your heart, Jim, and mine, because we use this a lot in our lives and we believe in its power. And that is the Internet Archive is struggling because publishers like the New York Times, all the main news publishers have blocked it from getting their information because the large language models then are going to Internet Archive to get the data they can't get from the publishers themselves.
Yeah, there's
Yeah.
a few websites that I say need to be defended with blood and flesh. Wikipedia is among them, and so is the Internet Archive. Best known to most people is the Wayback Machine. It's important to have legitimate and legitimizing authoritative archives of our human experience. And the web has been the epicenter of the human experience for the last 25 years. Without the Internet Archive, we're left with basically the history and about pages of corporations. The Internet Archive is a neutral library of everything, but it has to, it's open to everybody. There's no restrictions to accessing the library, except that it's being used as training models for unscrupulous AI companies. And so now this is the saddest thing is the New York Times and the Guardian and the Toronto Star and all the last large independent news sources have to cut off the archive because some sort of subscription model is integral to what remains of their revenue models.
Well, it's not just that, though. It's that and there's an easy fix for this, but it's not going to happen. If the large language models trained and respected robots' text files when they were training, then the Internet Archive could just say you can't train on our data. But we know that that's not how that works. They don't respect them. And even if they say they do respect them, we know in previous cases they've even created new IP addresses to get around the blocks so they could still train on things. So. The Internet Archive has a trillion pages, which is incredibly valuable to a large language model for training. But unfortunately, their desire to train on it and ignore the, would you say, the decency standards of the web, don't violate when there's robots text there, don't violate the site. It's like, it's
Well,
consent.
that was the
It's like,
unscrupulous part. They don't
yes,
care about the directives
they
that you
don't
put up
care.
to try to
They
stop
don't
them from
care.
getting the information. They're sharks. They must keep moving. And if they don't keep moving, they'll die.
And
They must keep feeding.
for someone who's not understanding what we're saying about robots text, it's basically like someone comes up to you and says, "I'd like to look in your purse," and you go, "No," and they go, "I'm going anyways," and you're like, "No," and then it goes, "No, I'm going into your purse now," and you go, "No," and then it takes your purse anyway because you didn't fight it off hard enough. Basically, it's kind of like that. So it's basically consent, and the website says, "I do not consent to have you crawl me and take my data, train on it, or crawl it for other purposes." And so my robot's text file, I say, you are not allowed. Your bot is not allowed. But I don't have to respect that. It's not forced. They should respect it, but they don't. So that's the big problem here is like the New York Times publishes a story, and if that goes in the Internet Archive and the LLMs scoop it up and they get the traffic before the Times does because it goes into their models or AI overviews in Google, then they don't get the traffic they need to stay alive with their ad revenues. Yeah,
Well,
so
it's not even
it's
ad revenues. You need to, it's subscription revenues. That's the and
that too.
subscribers
That
see
too.
the ads.
Yeah, that
Yeah.
too. So we do have one person that offered help, and that is we're going to have him on the show, and it's a perfect time to ask him to come on the show because it's Fabrice from Bing, Microsoft.
Yeah, Fabrice Canal. Has offered whatever support he can offer, including Index Now.
And I
But,
like this. Okay.
well, even so, I mean, I'm not sure how much that allows the archive, the newspapers, the news sources to feed the archive, without necessarily having to be crawled. Or I should say, I'm sorry, it sets up a special crawling relationship between the archive and those publications. I'm not sure how it protects those publications in the long run, though,
Well, so here's
from
what.
AIs.
So the Internet Archive on Twixter said publishers have real questions about AI, but let's be clear, Wayback Machine isn't a backdoor for AI scraping. For 30 years, it's been built for people, not bulk harvesting. We actively monitor to prevent abuse. And then they have an article on that. And Fabrice posted back, I fully support your noble mission to back up the web. You are essential for preserving our digital history. Happy to have helped you adopt Index Now as a search engine to back up fresh content on websites much easier. Advancing your mission. So, Index Now, for people who don't know, it is a protocol that allows one file to be shared among multiple assets. Like Google says it doesn't use it, but they're supposedly testing it. Google being, I forget the one that they use on DuckDuckGo or Brave, and all those engines that are incorporated get all the information at one time instantly. And so I don't know if that's how that would work for them, but I'm sure that he has special things that he could do at Microsoft to like allow them to do it uniquely with the publishers. So, but it's really important because I don't know, I'm going to show my age here, but do you remember Microfiche, Jim?
Microfish, like
You go to the
microfiche. Oh
library.
yeah. The libraries, going into the depths of the libraries and looking at the feet. Absolutely.
You go to there and you go look up a news article from 20 years
So
ago,
I got
50
through
years ago.
university.
And that's basically the Internet Archive shows you. I mean, it's used by lawyers, by researchers. You can go and look. If the government says we took down this section of a site, you can go to the Internet Archive. You can go look at the section from 2 days ago that was there. You can do things like if I know something is important for a client that needs to be preserved, I will go ahead and add the Internet Archive URL myself to make sure it gets crawled.
Oh yeah,
So,
back in the day, like when I
yeah.
was admit the earlier part, the Internet Archive, by the way, has been around forever.
Please.
Back like in the early aughts, when I was, it's still a young and dumb SEO, I would lose a file here and there. The Internet Archive saved my ass so many
Yeah,
times.
and it's something that news reporters really need. So it's kind of funny, ironically, not haha, that it's that the publishers are the ones that are making it, so they don't have what they need on the Internet Archive. But I hope Fabrice can help and. Fabrice had already agreed to be a guest on the show, so I'm going to contact him after this and see if he can come on and talk about how he might be able to help the Internet Archive.
Indeed. Okay, so times change as things go on. John Mueller the other day was,
He's getting spicy.
we often, I mean,
In
we
a good
often
way.
try to imagine, try to put ourselves in John's shoes,
Yeah.
answering questions, dealing with some really good questions, and so often some kind of naive questions, but everything you say gets like, cut apart and analyzed, and it's the most important thing. So everything John says has to be so measured and so careful, and that must be so terribly frustrating. And
Yes, very much so.
sometimes, he loses composure, but when he does, it's always in a funny and often polite way.
Yeah, just direct way. He's not couching it. So
Well,
we have
in
two
this, I
quotes
mean,
from John
this
this
is
week, which
John
are
losing
fun.
composure, right?
So I don't know where the conversation came from because it doesn't click to anything else. It's not a thread. So, but basically, something made John spicy. And he said, to me, when someone self-declares themselves as an SEO guru, it's an extremely obvious sign that they're a clueless imposter. SEO is not belief-based. Nobody knows everything, and it changes over time. You have to acknowledge that you're wrong at times, learn, and practice more. So obviously, that is a reply to something. I just don't know what. I wasn't in the SEO water cooler this week to know. But yeah, but you know what? Dave, the former partner, your former podcast partner on this show, my former business partner, wrote an article back in like 2007 or something because they were calling people rock stars about why he was not a rock star. And there's a tendency, it is true in the industry, if you call yourself an SEO guru, you're going to probably get laughed at, maybe not to your face, but maybe to your face. But yeah, there's no way to know everything in SEO because it's a black box. Google will not tell us everything. They tell us what they want us to know. They give us some standards they didn't used to give 10 years ago, which are great. They have John instead of Matt to ask questions to. But yeah, you can't know everything. But if someone studies a lot, they can say, I know that thing, but also it could change.
Yeah, I'm
So
of
tomorrow.
okay, I'm of like two minds on this. First off, yeah, everything you say in the modern day, absolutely true. Like, there's no such thing as an SEO guru, and anyone who says they're an SEO guru is
A clueless
marketing.
imposter.
But in the olden days, for what it's worth, things are taken so much more seriously today. Back in the olden days, we were literally making this up as we went along. There was no precedent for working with search engines because we were
No.
the original people working with the original search engines.
No
And so,
guide. No,
you know,
no
we used, we were,
classes.
well, we were a lot less reverent in the way we use language. Calling yourself a guru was basically calling yourself a thought leader, and it was often self-referential. Very rarely would we call
Really?
somebody a guru unless they called themselves a guru. The founder of this network, Darren Babin, was SE guru for
I'm
the
sure that was
longest
tongue
time.
in cheek too, though.
Well, most
I
things Darren
mean,
did were very
yeah.
serious, but he's a you know, he has a very strong sense of humor. So yeah, it was
Yes.
tongue in cheek at the same time, but he was a very serious SEO in his time too, eh? One of the top shows from our former network, Webmaster Radio, was the SEO Rockstars. And the people who hosted that show originally were treated like rock stars
Oh, sure.
in the original iteration of the industry.
Sure. I wasn't saying there aren't people that could qualify. I'm just saying Dave, someone called him a rock star and he just thought like
But
there is
he
such a thing.
was a rock star
Right.
back then in
Right.
2007. He
He was.
absolutely legitimately was. Everywhere we went, we were given free drinks. We were given free booze. We were like, you know, we didn't pay cover at the clubs whenever the when all of the stuff that was, and it was about being on the speaker circuit, certainly.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And it felt like being a rock star, and it really affected a lot of egos, mine included. I was actually kind of a terrible person in a lot of ways back then.
Yeah, you gave me my break, so I
Well,
can't complain.
you know, it's what you do for everybody. It's the
You're
right
doing
thing to do.
great. Yes,
Anyway.
Jim, way back in the day, I was eating dinner. First time I think I met you, and you turned to me when everyone got up to get drinks. Dave had just gotten up, and you go, "Did you thank Dave for bringing you here tonight?" Because it was all the big names in the industry and I was new. And I said, I thanked him so many times. He told me, stop thanking him. And he said, okay, I'm going to ask you to do this one thing. Jim doesn't remember. I could see by his face right now. He goes, yeah, I go, what one thing? He goes, you're going to pay it forward. You're going to find good people and bring them into the industry. And I said, okay, because when he said, I'm going to have you do one thing, it sounded like a little bit like a mafia talk. So, and I've done that ever since. I've helped
You
people
see,
without them
that's
knowing.
the White Hat Mafia, you see. You find
Yeah.
good people, you bring them into the industry. They
But
think
I
they're getting
did.
out, you pull them back in again.
I introduce them to everyone they need to know. I don't tell them that I'm doing anything like that. I just make sure that they get included like you did with me and Dave did with me. So it's really important back then because this is back in 2000, well, 6 or 7 or something like that.
Well, you know what? That was the way back then. I hope it's the way. I imagine it's still the way today. I certainly hope it is.
I don't think it's much, but I still try to do that. So,
And
bring
I'm
you.
so off the conference circuit. I don't even know what that's like anymore.
Brighton SEO. I will be at Brighton SEO in San Diego this year. That's probably one of the few, especially with airline flights doubling overnight. So, John
Adding to what
Mueller's,
Mueller said, adding
yes,
to what
adding to
Mueller
what he
said,
said, SEO is
there's
yeah, he said that SEO is complex, multifaceted, and resilient. You can do a lot of things that don't work and still do okay. This one I felt a little puzzled by because, yes,
why?
it's multifaceted and resilient. And you can do a lot of things that don't work. You can also do a lot of things that do harm,
That's true.
right? So you really do have to know as much as possible. This sort of sounds like, yeah, you know, some things you do will work, some not, but it's okay. But as you
I
have
didn't
to really
read it
know
that
as,
way. Oh my goodness. I so totally didn't read it that way.
I did, but I just mean that you do have to know as much as possible so that you don't do harm. But it is okay if some things don't work when you do it.
Yeah, okay, so assuming the baseline is that the practitioner knows what they're doing, they shouldn't be a practitioner if they don't. So we'll assume that's the baseline. There's always a lot of tweaks and effects that you do on a website. Core Web Vitals is a really good example. A lot of work goes into minimizing images, to making sure that crawl paths are fast and efficient, that say core images or core assets that don't have to that aren't going to change over time, don't have to be reloaded by the browser over and over and over again. The whole bunch of maybe that's making a difference in your specific instance. Maybe it's not making a difference in your specific instance. It's work that you got to do, but maybe that was something Google, you know what I mean? Like maybe that was the tipping factor for Google. Maybe it wasn't, but it's all work that should be done anyway because it improves the website, makes it faster and better for users, makes it easier for Google and other
Yeah.
crawlers. But in, how to say it? Some. All
He's talking
things
about
need to be
specifically
done.
SEO, though.
It'll be more significant for some sites than for others.
Yeah, but he said you can, he was talking about SEO specifically, though, when he said you can do a lot of things that don't work and still do okay. And
Yeah.
that's true. But if you do a lot of things that don't work, that means you probably aren't up to date on your practices. Because you and I both don't do a lot of things that don't work. We do some things that sometimes don't work. You're testing something, but pretty much after you have experience in the industry and you keep up with everything and you're reading and you're doing the site work, 90% of what you do works. You just do.
We had a shared client once a few years ago. It was a publisher. This was actually just when Google was lowering the hammer on publishers. And one of the things I recommended to them was, you know, proper site structure and contextualizing using site structure to contextualize the content. I think it was really good advice then. It's much better advice today. So they didn't do that. And they lost a lot of rankings, but that may or may not be the reason. It's probably not the reason they lost a lot of rankings. Had they done that, it may have helped them. It may not have helped them. Would have been very hard to tell given how screwed up that website was.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, if you're doing a lot of things that don't work, then you probably should know more. You just probably need to learn more. You shouldn't be doing a lot of things that don't work. Some things that don't work. Testing things that may not work. But if you're not doing a lot of things, you're just guessing if they're not working. And that means that you probably need to up your knowledge by, following people, listening to our podcasts, or, reading more from Google's documents or something of that nature. That's just my belief.
Oh, could you imagine having a website that is completely clean, it's crawlable, you've proven it's eminently crawlable, you're actually getting both impressions and clicks on all your important pages, so you know that it's getting through, but you're just not getting the traction you need. You throw everything
Well,
at it.
that's when they come to me to audit it
Yeah.
to find out why they're not getting the traffic. So I'm not saying,
Yeah.
like I said, I'm just saying if you're doing a lot of things that aren't working, you might need to up your education. That's all. You're not always going to
Absolutely.
do some things that don't work because it's a black box and nobody knows everything and things change all the time. But you have to keep up. That's the one thing about this industry. It's great, especially if you're ADD. You have to keep up with it every single day. You can't go like a week and not check in because everything could have changed during that week. And that's been true for 20 years that I've been in. So,
Well, more so true today when you're actually trying to keep track of
oh, yeah.
at
Everything.
least two different tracks of SEO. And each of those tracks is multifaceted.
Exactly.
Okay, so moving along. There's something about being head of industry or maybe the world's richest person or whatever that brings, I don't know, some degree of bad karma. Elon Musk is experiencing that again this week. Unflattering secrets about him being revealed in his latest fight
Yeah.
with Sam Altman from chat from OpenAI. Cringy text, screwed up emails, weird diary entries.
Musk's alleged secret agent inside OpenAI was also the mother of his four children. There's a section on Mark Zuckerberg privately offered help, Musk help and information. These are text messages. These aren't like hearsay kind of things. Musk thinks Jeff Bezos is a tool. These are all text messages. There's a part about him being at Burning Man in here. So basically, it's two tech bros going after each other on what OpenAI was supposed to be, nonprofit, these things, and Musk is suing him as part of the original members of OpenAI. But I don't know, how far
Well,
that's going to go. This is
remember,
a story in the Washington Post, by the way, so.
yeah. So it in the very itself is suspect, given that Bezos owns the Washington Post and has screwed with it to
Well,
the
except these
point
are
that
text
it's
messages. These are text messages. You can see them in the article. They
oh,
actually say,
certainly, certainly, certainly,
yeah.
certainly. But the way you compose the article, anyway. But the bottom line, these guys don't actually like each other. Musk was involved with OpenAI at the very beginning. Left the company. Started went and bought X, started Grok's AI. He has a serious commercial interest in screwing over OpenAI any way he possibly can, and
Yeah.
OpenAI changing its ownership structure from a nonprofit to, I think, a beneficiary nonprofit, is a way for him to screw them over.
Yeah, and as we know, Sam Altman had the expose from the New Yorker, Ronan Farrow, yes, last week, which is definitely, yeah,
Earned
definitely
bad
not good.
karma.
Yeah. So if you want to know a lot about what goes on in the inner workings of two billionaire tech bros, read the Washington Post article and the Ronan Farrow article. And we do find out, though, in this article that Musk does rhino ketamine. Never heard of it before. That's when you do hallucinogenic and ketamine. But the important part about that is he lied under oath that he didn't do it. And then they found evidence that he does. But we already know he does ketamine. So. But that's the level that they're getting at this court case. So,
Out of
yeah.
curiosity, is that a brand of ketamine? I use
No, it's
Rhino
just mixing.
brand.
No, it's just mixing apparently hallucinogenics with the ketamine. I don't know why you want to add hallucinogenic to ketamine, because ketamine has its own properties. But either way, and I definitely going to read more deeply into the alleged secret agent in OpenAI was the mother of his four children. So anyway, but it's interesting. It is interesting. I'm a sociologist by education.
You
It
got to
is
be.
interesting to know who's running these companies on a more personal level. And then sometimes you have to ask yourself, how did they ever get there? So.
Well, and we have to be really careful how we phrase these stories. So we're not talking about an Asiatic pregnancy, nothing biblical or mythical like that. This is a literal secret agent, not a Asiatic secret agent.
Oh yeah, no,
Just
it was that,
to be
yeah.
clear.
The mother of his children was hired at OpenAI to give him information. Yeah.
but we expect within, I don't know, 6 months, maybe 9 months or so, to be reporting on agentic semination. We don't know
No,
how,
don't, no,
but we're sure it'll
no,
happen.
no. Let's move on.
Come on, millions of millions of AI agents trying to figure this one out.
I think actually that
They'll
someone
figure
already
it out
used that
eventually.
term in an article somewhere. So this
No,
is
I
real
just made that
quick.
up.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Oh, yeah,
I thought
totally.
I'd see. But this is a really quick story. OpenAI. They're barred from using the I/O name for devices in a trademark suit. Currently, they're going to use I/O. I don't know how you can do that because there's .io as a TLD. Like, would .io now be in violation of copyright? I don't know.
They
But
can get a .io. They just can't use it as their branding,
right. But
like
I'm
this is
saying,
central to their message.
but if they branded the I/O, does .io become violation of their copyright
What if OpenAI
trademark?
started doing everything as the accentuating the .io? That is the centerpiece of that's what this ruling is basically saying.
Yeah, basically. So right now they are barred from using the I/O because there is a company IYO that has a trademark I/O already. So we'll see. It's just temporary right now, a temporary restraining order. This is in the Bloomberg Law publication.
Indeed. We need a scorecard to keep up with acronyms and
Oh my
domain
gosh, yeah.
names and top level domains and all that stuff. Okay, so surprise, surprise, Anthropic's Claude is pumping out what is now vulnerable code. It was vulnerable code then too. Even the latest models are introducing serious holes in security. If you're vibe coding your way through life, I mean, Cool, move
Don't.
forward and break things. That's the mantra and everything, but don't be surprised when things get broke.
So, an article in Forbes, there is somebody who is looking at these models for the defect and security issues. He's trusted SEC CEO and former NSA analyst Dave Kennedy. He said 5 weeks ago to today, when they interviewed him, the code quality is over 47.3% worse than when it was released. It is bad. This is a quote. It is really bad. I mean, unusably bad.
So
That
it's
figure.
degrading bad. It was
It's degrading.
almost 50% better when Opus 4.6 was released.
Now, it is possible. I don't see it in this article. If I could have missed it, but there is a line of talking points among experts in the field that Anthropic has reduced tokens because they're running out of compute and it's so expensive. And so they've
Because
seen there's.
Mythos. Yeah, Mythos eats everything. It's like to do what they're doing with Mythos takes so much power.
And so they're saying that the overall Anthropic's quality has dropped everywhere because basically they're possibly running out of compute power. And so if they don't have compute power, they can't keep going. So they have reduced it in other areas. And apparently this could be, it doesn't say that it is the reason, but it definitely could be the reason because it's at the same time as everybody else is experiencing the degradations.
Okay.
So so it's if you're using it, be very, don't I've said this a million times, I'm gonna say it again. If you're using it and you don't know how to code for your own stuff and you're taking your own risks, that's fine. No big deal. Do whatever you want. If you are pushing it out to the public, because I'm getting a little nervous, Jim. I'm seeing people I know Vibe Code pushing out tools in
Yeah.
our industry. And I think legally they should have to disclose that they don't have coders. Like that they're like vibe coding stuff, right? And because it puts out more vulnerabilities normally, and now we're talking about it even more as this model degrades if they're using Claude, I think they should have to divulge that. But either way, do know if you're doing this, you are legally responsible in the state of California for any issues it can cause. And because we know how easy it's become for a lot of hackers to get inside these models and do harm, I would be not doing that because it literally states in California law that you can sue the developer of a product if you are in some way breached. It used to be a company, so not the developer specifically, but it is down to the developer level.
I'm curious, what do you do if it's if you're using vibe coded stuff? Okay, you know what? Hide it in the end user license agreement. That's exactly what they're going to do.
Probably, but
Somewhere
don't.
around line 463, this was vibe coded.
And in our very,
Warningly.
yes, in our very small industry, you would earn a bad reputation really, really quickly. So,
I mean, there's rules of survival on the internet. One of which is assume everything is monitored. Another should be assume everything is vibe coded. It's not secure. It was like, but now you can't be 100% certain. Even with some of the largest institutions and corporations, they are desperately struggling to. Make more money for their shareholders because they actually tend to be profiting quite well, but they're laying off coders and replacing them with AIs. And rather than getting, I mean, they're getting a lot of stuff done. Certainly, they are moving fast and possibly breaking things. And one of the things that's being broken is the remaining coders who have to spend a lot of time fixing stuff that they didn't have to fix before. And this is actually led to a recurring paradox, Laszlo's paradox, that we'll get to the paradox in economics in a moment, but long and short of it is the great productivity gains from AI are being eaten by the lack of productivity of your really good human workforce having to fix the problems with AI. And we haven't even gotten to the time when everything starts to fall apart, which is probably, as systems fail because they weren't coded properly and problems weren't found, which is probably sooner than later. So that'll also
Well,
cost money, time, and productivity.
So in an article from Fortune, thousands of CEOs just admitted AI had no impact on employment or productivity, and it has economists resurrecting the paradox from 40 years ago. So the paradox is 40 years ago, 1987. Oh my gosh, I feel so old. Economist and Nobel laureate Robert Solow made a stark observation about the stalling evolution of the information age. Following the advent of transistors, microprocessors, integrated circuits, and memory chips of the 1960s, economists and companies expected these new technologies to disrupt workplaces and result in a surge of productivity. Instead, productivity growth slowed, dropping from 2.9% in 1948 to 1.1% after 1973. And that's the paradox they're talking about. And we do know that there were 7,000 companies researched. We did this article like a month or so ago, where they found the max 3% increase in productivity, but high burnout rates among top performers, especially in the marketing area. So they're not finding that they're still hopeful though there will be use, like in the story. Like they still hope that it will happen. But right now it's not actually producing what they were told it would produce. And then in fact it can be a detriment.
The Salo paradox is it's coined in 1987 by the economist Robert Salo. You can see the computer age everywhere, but in the pro but in product productivity statistics.
Yeah, and we know from industries that tried to adopt this, like they thought medical notes, like doctors and nurses and all those stuff, right? The medical notes would love it, right? And at first they did, and then it made so many errors the entire industry rejected it, right? And in the legal area, it is illegal to use the GPTs because they produce erroneous citations. And so
Well,
you can
yeah.
actually lose your law. You can use your law license. Well, 2 years ago, though,
It's
there
happened
wasn't a
a couple
law.
times. It's
Yeah.
happened a couple
So.
it's happened in Canada, in the province of Ontario at least once. And I know we've seen a couple in American cases.
Yeah, but so it is following suit that it might be possible that the CEOs are realizing this isn't doing what it was promised to them either. So. And a lot of those,
Well,
yeah, a lot
and
of.
a lot of companies, no matter what, in the face of, mounting evidence that this may not be the right path to go down, are still absolutely committed to finding some form of productivity gain by training their by getting rid of their workforce and replacing with AI. Meta has, you got something else on Salo?
Yeah, I just was gonna say, a lot of times they're not firing them to replace them with AI. They're firing them to pay for the AI to hope to replace them.
Well, in this case, the sorry, I want to jump to Meta is going to be
Yeah.
tracking, using keyboard tracking,
That's
to
so awful.
force its employees to basically train the AI systems that are likely to take their jobs in the future.
So as we know from, oh, go ahead. I was gonna say.
Well, a memo got circulated amongst Meta employees. You can tell when a workforce is dissatisfied by the number of times memos leak. Internal
Yeah,
memos
very
leak.
true.
This one leaked. Thomson Reuters got a hold of it and reported that Meta Superintelligence Labs is working on a new model capability initiative by tracking employee keystrokes. Quote, "This is where all Meta employees can help our models get better by simply doing their daily work," the memo reads. A spokesperson, Andy Reid, told Reuters that collected training data will help Meta's AI agents with tasks it sometimes struggles with, including things like mouse movements, clicking buttons, and navigating drop-down menus. That's kind of
Yeah, so
spooky.
do you remember the story we covered a couple of weeks ago where he had been doing this with himself? So he was training, tracking all his own, so he could create a him in the virtual sense to do what he
Oh,
does
I,
during the day.
where
Zuckerberg,
Zuckerberg was
sorry.
trying to
Yeah.
make an AI clone of himself. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what they're going to do to the employees. I don't think they have any ability to opt out of this without quitting. And they're actually being told they have to use a certain amount of AI. That's a lot of companies are doing, as though that indicates anything. It's like, use $500,000 in tokens. Like, okay. They are finding, of course, that it can convert natural language commands to virtual actions. But again, that's like If you've ever been laid off, like when they have you train your replacement, this is like the new meaning to training your replacement. They're gonna replace it with AI. Of course, we also know that the companies that have done this so far have secretly hired back all their people because it did not work. I think he thinks he can beat the system by giving it more data, but we also know large language models don't necessarily get better because they have more information, more training. So we'll see, but I feel bad for the people at Meta because you have to be sitting there thinking, I'm going to lose my job. The other thing they'll probably
Well,
do, though, you know what they'll probably do? As sociologists, this is common in companies where they do stuff like this, not like with the training, but other things to replace you. I mean, I could sit there and just do random keystrokes for an hour every day, and that would totally mess up the model, right? Because it's an anomaly it can't account for. It's just training.
yeah,
So,
but the model's not necessarily the only one looking at what's being tracked.
oh, yeah, sure. But I'm saying you could be like, I don't know, whatever you do to circumvent the tracking. Anyway, but it is possible that the employers will do that.
Yeah, well, again, if the employees do that, it's very likely that some human manager somewhere down the line, or even some AI noticing that you're giving serious slop coming off of unit number 46, are going to check on whoever number 46 is.
I'm just practicing my keyboard.
Yeah, well, that's not what they're paying you 100 grand a year for.
Imagine.
Okay. Google's Liz Reed, the VP of Google's Vice President of Search, in a Bloomberg podcast interview, is suggesting AI isn't killing search. In fact, it's getting rid of the low quality clicks, the bounce clicks. You know, when people go to a page to grab a quick fact or something and then just bounce out, not converting clicks, just, you know. But if people have gone through the overview and decide that they want to click, they tend to be stronger and more converting. So, according to Reed, it's helping. It's helpful.
Yeah, we'll see.
I'm of two minds of this. In some ways, she's absolutely right. There is a decline in lower quality clicks if you measure click against conversion. But I've always been of the mind that people might come to your website 5, 6, 7, 8 times before making the purchase decision, because the one of the big retailers I worked for, I worked for these guys for like 5 years. People developed a relationship with that web page, with those with that environment. When they went and did those quick hits for information, yeah, sure, that was a wasted click. That absolutely, if you only measure by that one click. But every time they come and get the information that they needed, they trusted that brand just a little bit more.
Yeah.
There's a cumulative effect, and I think, 4 or 5 clicks later, they're likely to make a purchase. That's real.
Yeah, that's very real. Yeah, but we do know also that the tests using AI agents have not gone well for shopping. So, like you said, people like to go to the website. Reed said that people want AI in the web. AI will not replace websites. A lot of the SEO servers theorizing right now they're going to announce that AI mode is going to be completely the internet. I don't see them doing that just because one, ads, but two, there's no function of search to go find things, and then people would leave to for a product where they could go find things. You know, so most half of the users that use an LLM to answer something aren't searching; they're talking to it, right? They're not looking for something; they're having a conversation with it. So there wouldn't be a web page they would necessarily go to. So that would be a big gamble for Google to get rid of it. And I don't think right now they will. I know that Sundar threw in the air a couple of weeks ago that I don't know, maybe we'll see if websites are still there, but they have to have something to train on and send people to. So even if they do
Until a
agents.
until okay, how to say this? The web page is more than just getting information to. I mean, actually, it's not. That's exactly what it is. It's only about getting information to people. But sometimes information can't be conveyed in a AI overview or even in a search result. The web page is so incredibly versatile. There's so many things you can place on it. There's things you can do, ways you can, for want of a better word, tell a story with a website that is like using every other medium that's been invented before together, because the website is only a platform for all other mediums. You can't get rid of it. I can't imagine internet without the website as the basic platform to put stuff on.
No, a lot of people in our industry I know are going, oh, agents, it's all gonna be about agents. It's like agents is a way for a task to be completed, not
Sure.
replacement for a website.
Maybe agents will go and extract information from web pages on websites. Sure, that doesn't mean that the page existent for human usage won't be there. Or that even if the page is existent for agentic usage, we're still going to consider it a document that is being sourced from its own little, your own little section of the well, the great well that is the web.
We've
It's
had
always going to
libraries.
be expressed on a in a place that has an address and a name.
We've had libraries for a millennium. So we're gonna have this. I mean, all the internet is a digital library for you to go to on a computer instead of a physical space. So if you got rid of the library portion, you'd have the card catalog system left with maybe, the summary like they do in the digital card catalogs now. But that'd all be there. And besides, what would they train on? What would they send people to? They can't sell their own product,
There you
so they
go.
wouldn't have ability to get merchant information. Like, they're not going away. But I know that the AI, I do think they are dumbing down the regular organic, so people will use the AI mode, because I am getting in search results 60 to 80% social media sites on serious queries, not something where that would be appropriate. And so I'm getting like Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Quora, Reddit, and I'm like, tell me about heart disease. And it's like, it's all social media and user-generated content. And here's two websites from a hospital or research agency, right? That's not what I looked for. We're just saying it was like that. AI overviews are query dependent. This is, so there's no ranking system yet. We do know one's coming. We don't know exactly where they're going to put it. But AI overviews are query dependent. That's neural matching that Google uses to do the last sort order anyway. So basically, the index is the same. All the AI products use the organic index. They skip the ranking signal part in the AI products, and they all use neural matching, which is query to page, query to topic, right? So you type it in, and it's looking for the query, the entities either related to it or the entity itself, nouns on the page. So that is one. That's really important. Changing query behavior. They say queries are longer. We've been talking about that for a decade, though. Queries have been longer. Well, yeah, close to a decade. Voice search. Like, queries have been longer since
Well,
voice
and
search.
queries get longer as people talk about them to their chat friend, their chat agent. So, I know this, like when asking for music, say I'm asking for Alexa to find something first thing in the morning, can't find it, so I ask a different way, and then I ask a different way, until eventually I'm naming like the entire album and where you'll find the cut track on the album. Queries do get longer the more you got to talk about them.
Yeah, and they say that'll affect their ads as well, because ads will have more information to be more targeted. Google is watching whether people return to search more often. Does it cause people to come to search more often? We said that's a high bar. That's another thing you get to decide if you're when you like whether you bother to unlock your phone or something. So that's basically most of it. AI slop is not new. Ranking is a solution. Low quality content isn't new. AI just makes more of it, Reid said. Before there was AI slop, there was slop. Yes, we had spinners that affiliates used to spin off other websites. So yes, that was really bad slop too. It just wasn't as prevalent. It wasn't 40% of the web, but still. So they're hoping to keep it at a low rate. I think that's where the ranking signals are going to come in. I just don't know if they're ranking the citations that they're using, or if they're going to rank the actual documents they pull before they cite. So that's the basically what she said. Most of the rest of it was stuff we already know.
Just an answer to what you're saying. I think to make it easy for themselves, they're going to source from documents that are ranking well in organic, give more weight to information from those documents. Not that they won't potentially use other signals for pages that aren't ranking well against specific queries, but I think there's their original sorting formula, rank counts.
Yes,
But
exactly.
there's no AI ranking formula whatsoever that does not exist.
No, it does not exist. I saw someone saying that the other day, and like, it's just a term. I'm like, no, ranking signals are not just a term, they're a very specific part of the process, and they're only used right now in organic search.
Yeah,
So,
and this is a place, incidentally, Christine, where you and I are going to be in lockstep agreement on terms and words absolutely matter.
yeah, it absolutely matter. Yeah,
I
you
mean,
can't use ranking signal. It doesn't, there's not a thing.
no. Well, I mean, it is in a specific
Yeah,
context.
I'm saying, sorry, in AI products in Google, it is not a thing, or ChatGPT or any of the rest, they don't use ranking signals.
Yeah, and things are really confusing right now. So as you describe stuff to clients, other SEOs, other practitioners, or whatever, you got to be really careful out there. I mean, like,
You
because we're
do.
representing an entire industry.
Exactly. So hey,
Okay.
we got two quick, I could go over these really quickly. We've got two hack stories that people need to know about, but we don't have to get into great detail.
Well,
And
we
then go look.
mentioned the Roblox one,
I know,
which
I
was
accidentally
really
added that
interesting because
early.
this is how they like opened up Mythos.
So Versal, this is Versal, that was my mistake earlier. Versal was breached with a Roblox cheat. And it ended with an entire AI security thesis. This is from Forbes. So basically, a group called context.ai went looking for something on the internet. They were not trying to steal credentials or pivot a billion-dollar cloud company. They were trying to cheat at Roblox. And basically, they were able to re reverse engineer a victim's browser history, and the employee was searching for and downloading auto farm scripts and game exploit executors, the kind of tool that automates grinding inside an online game. Hidden in one of those downloads was LumaStealer, one of the most widely distributed pieces of InfoStealer malware currently in circulation. I'm reading this directly, so I don't get anything wrong. So what LumaStealer does is simple. It waits on the affected machine and quietly exfiltrates every credential that the user's browser has ever saved. Google Workplace, workspace logins, AI, API keys, session cookies, OAuth tokens. Doesn't care what, it just takes it all. So it harvests everything and it ships it to the criminal marketplace. So for 2 months, those credentials sat in a database until someone noticed the email address belonging to the core engineer at Context AI, a company that builds AI Office Suite agents on top of the Google Workspace accounts. And basically, Versal, which is underlining a lot of the internet, confirmed that an attacker had used those credentials to breach Context AI, steal the OAuth tokens of its customers, and pivot into the Google Workspace of a Versal employee who had signed up for Context AI's product and granted allow all permissions to everybody. So if you use Versal, by the way, we could not cover everything you need to do right now. Go look up what you need to do. Because there's a whole bunch of steps like rotating tokens and things like that that you have to do to make sure that you are not affected by this. But it is a massive attack. And, apparently not kind of a little bit of luck involved in there. And no true intent at first, but the nefarious guys got a hold of it. So
Okay, another app, a vibe coding platform, Lovable, got rocked this week.
yeah, so it had some base the Lovable hosted app, this is from the register, a register, littered with basic flaws, exposed 18,000 users, according to researchers. The vibe coding platform Lovable has been accused of hosting apps riddled with vulnerabilities after saying users are responsible for addressing security issues flagged before publishing. So basically, you're vibe coding, which means you're probably not a coder, and their way of getting out of being legally responsible is they tell you you've been flagged for vibe coding issues. So Tamir Khan, a tech entrepreneur, found 16 vulnerabilities, six of which were critical, in a single Lovable hosted app that had leaked more than 18,000 people's data. So basically, this is why we talk all the time on this show about if you do not know how to code, do not vibe code. So 18,000 people's information was leaked because of this one situation, but apparently it is a regular situation with Lovable's code, the code that Lovable produces. And we know vibe coding tends to produce more vulnerabilities than a software developer coding. So if you're using it, be very, very careful. Make sure you have a coder to review what you have, or do not put it out to the public. Just use it for yourself.
Okay, we have a number of stories to go through, and actually
Yes.
have a hard stop in just a few minutes, so we have to move really quickly. This, I
Yes,
think,
we
is
do.
gonna this next story, I think, is actually demonstrating a shift in the age that we're in. If you thought a lot of power, energy, and tokens went into the LLM-driven AIs that we were using, oh, I don't know, just a few weeks ago. Wait till you see what happens when people get all agentic. In fact, this is causing a crisis in, or a potential crisis that's coming very soon. They're honestly just, I'm going to say that like tokens is power, and there just isn't enough tokens out there, enough power out there, enough compute out there for what's coming.
And also they're starting to restrict. So like Claude this week said they might get rid of the $20 subscription and raise it to 100 because it's so expensive. So a lot of the systems that are using these tokens are thinking of getting rid of the free models and eliminating the low cost models because they can't afford to keep up when they're not making any money. And we know these companies burn billions and billions of dollars a month. So if you're using those for free or using the $20 model, there might be enough outrage that it doesn't happen, but be careful, you could wind up without something to use.
Well, yeah, or what you are using has either become a lot more expensive or a lot slower suddenly.
Yeah, exactly. Or more erroneous because they're giving less tokens to the freer, lower cost models.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. A blogger goes by the name The Privacy Guy, is pretty pissed, pretty concerned because Anthropic, without letting him know, installed spyware on his machine.
Yeah, now this is for a specific model. This is Claude Desktop. It's not everything. So don't want anyone to worry, but it's a Claude Desktop. It has a special name for Mac. So, but basically, to make a long story short, this is from that privacy guy, Anthropic Secret Sauce, what spyware, its title. Creates a bridge when it wakes up, and the bridge doesn't do anything for your agents, but your agents then have access to everything as you. That's the bridge. So, like, I'm in my bank account, I'm in my shopping app, I'm in my email. It now has control as you, acts as you, an admin on your own machine. And so it is sending back information. It also runs outside the browser sandbox. So basically, they're getting information from you that they shouldn't be getting. And also, it opens you up to other issues like, being attacked because if someone gets access to any of this, including you on your computer, then they're you as an admin on your computer.
I'm guessing they're just using you as a training model somehow.
Yeah. Probably, but still, it's not disclosed. And you might be pri doing private typing and don't want people to, record that information. So.
Okay. Google has updated Workspace to make AI a basically your new office intern. So pretty much everything in the Google Office productivity suite, Google Sheets, Google Docs, etc., is going to have a Gemini AI sort of working on the side to help you out. Yay.
Oh, we skipped a whole bunch of stories.
We
No,
did, but we are also almost out of time. We have 10
it's
minutes.
okay. We'll be fine. I could actually go over some of these really quickly. So,
I think
ChatGPT
that.
ad
I think
manager
that the Search
interface.
Central, like Google had a massive event, a large event in Toronto. Search Central talked about AI, talked about publishing, what it is and is not going to be honoring or looking at and publishing on. I don't know. I think that's kind of up there.
So John Chouinard, Chouinard, on his website, JC Chouinard, has a whole list of everything that they covered. There's a lot here, so it's not something we can cover at one time. It's
It was
also got
excellent
slides.
coverage.
Yeah, he's got slides on things. There are, I don't know if we've gotten to it yet. There is one major thing about content that we need to talk about briefly, but go to that website, look up JC Chouinard, and he has an excellent layout of it. So, as this is the one we need to talk about. This is why is Google name things so weird?
Which one are you on?
Google on publishing commodity content.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, this was a weird one. Okay, so
Yeah, it sounds
commodity
so.
and non-commodity content.
I'm sorry, these are dumb names. They could have come up with something much simpler for people to just latch into.
Well, okay, so commodity content, according to Google, is the stuff that every real estate agent has on their website. Seven things you should look for when fine-tuning your mortgage. Non-commodity content is personal experience, things I did as a real estate broker to save my clients money.
So basically, people weren't getting that it's important to have unique experience or unique ways of approaching things when they write, because they've been saying this for 2 years now, year and a half. So now they called it commodity and non-commodity, and this is just horrible. What would you call it, Jeff? These are horrible words.
Not only are they horrible words, I think it's a little bit deceptive on Google's part. Because I
I
mean,
agree.
sometimes here's something the consumer might need to know those 7 tips
Yes.
on lowering their mortgage payments, and that might actually save them more money in the long run than whatever it is their agent did that he's blogging about to get like cred points with Google. And by the way, are we introducing a whole new SEO scam where we're like getting cred points with Google, like we did in the recipe in the cookbook industry like la a couple of years ago? Google is looking to get training material
Can
for
I
its.
tell you? Yes.
Like
And you know
that's
what
what
this is?
we need your personal experience because no one's telling stories anymore because like why write them? It costs too much.
By the way, I also think there's a secondary intent here. So I just did a whole bunch of research on how you have to write content for LLMs. The way Google is telling you to write the content would not be good for like ChatGPT and those ones. You have to do a combination of things. So like your bullet points of the 7 best things to consider when buying running shoes in an article would be good for the LLM, whereas just blocks of content written out like they're showing in this article would not be good for the LLM. They'd be good for
Well, actually, it
search.
depends on who on the LLM,
Yeah.
how it parses information.
Yeah.
I think Google might have some more advanced tools than the other
Google
companies do.
looks at the whole page. The LLM parsers look at chunks of the page based on entity construction, the nouns that are related to each other being close to each other. So they will skip
So.
sections of a page if they don't have entities in there that are related to each other. If you're writing long, wieldy blocks of content, then you are no longer doing that. It's okay. It's good for search, but it's just saying that the way Google is having you write it takes out all the things that LLMs that are not search love.
Gee, Christine, are you suggesting that Google is getting content creators and webmasters to create the web in the image that they want most?
Never. Sometimes I appreciate that about Google, but like you said, there are times when these things are good. The listicles are good. And I think that you should do a combination of the both. But they do want to see unique content because then they know it's not an AI writing it. And they do have a patent that compares pages in a topical vector against trusted pages to compare entities. So if all your entities are exactly the same as all the other pages, that means you wrote it likely with AI because you don't have any extraneous entities because AI cannot write outside its training. So that's possibly why they're doing this. But Google's 190 times your traffic. So, do Google first. But just add some bullet points, thanks. That's good too.
Okay, so Google was also at their event in Toronto talked about ways to open your site up for a better crawl, ways to structure your site so that again Google understands information on the site better, and of course ways to integrate AI into more of what you do. Okay, we've got, oh,
We
Christine, we
got
have
like
as
10
much time
minutes.
as you have left. Where do you want to go?
We could
I just wanted to
do
make sure
ten.
we got these stories, that
No, you're
story
right.
in.
Yeah, no, they're very important. And there's other ones I could go over super quickly. So I would like to do the Google Documents, read more snippet links, best practices. It
Yeah, for
sounds
sure.
weird, but this is, now where they put a link after your description and it says read more. Google is specifically telling you, the search engine roundtable, how to better optimize so that that comes up. That you get the read more, and so it's an extra click link, visible click link. So if you go to the article, they explain it to you. It's really quick. It's make sure content is immediately visible on the page to a human and not hidden behind expandable sections or tabbed interface. They do not deem things behind tabs as important as your main content. So if it's important content, it should not be behind one. Avoid using JavaScript to control user scroll position or on page load. Like don't force user scroll position to the top of the page because then that causes problems for them. And if you make history API calls on window location, window.location.hash modifications on page load, make sure you don't remove the hash fragment from the URL as this breaks deep linking behavior. So basically, these are just three quick tips. These are mostly for your developers, but it'll tell you how to get the read more click on your snippets from search. So I think that's important. And then the other ones, just really quickly, I can just go over them really fast. So let's see. Where did they go? Where did they go? Oh yeah. So there's better competitor targeting on ChatGPT ads. ChatGPT ads now allows you, supposedly, they don't know how if it's supposed to be this way, target your competitor by name, which you can't do in Google Ads, and then you can show up in their result. So that's something that might be worth for ad people. We'll see if it lasts because people aren't sure if it's real or a bug because Google doesn't allow you to target in a way, but you can't just like brand target.
Well, yeah, you can't brand surf at Google, but you can target by keywords,
You
like
can't target
keywords
by
that are.
keywords. Yeah, but you can't target by brand. And here you can target by brand.
Yeah, or brand surfing. That's what we used to call it.
Yeah, and then ChatGPT Ad Manager interface. Basically, they had nothing. Remember, we talked about this a couple months ago. They had nothing that told you anything about the ads you're running. It was a big black box. Like you run ads, but you don't know what you made, where they came from, what the business were like, any of that. So now they've added a dashboard to tell you some information about the ads you're running, which is important because nobody's going to buy ads if they don't get any information from them. And I think that was, let's see. Oh, a Microsoft advertising business. Sorry, Microsoft advertising released some new AI features. There's, you want to go read search
Copilot
engine?
checkout,
Yeah.
new
Copilot
Bristol
checkout.
Commerce Protocol.
Yeah.
They're getting in on that.
Clarity AI visibility insights. This is Microsoft's insights like GSE. And then AI.
Microsoft Clarity. Have you ever used that?
Yeah, that's really
It's
nice.
insane the detail
Yeah.
you get out of that.
It's really, really good. Yeah. And then AI Max at audience generation. So they introduced new solutions in the advertising platform to improve reach and relevance for search campaigns through expanded query matching, personal creative, and smarter URL routing. So, and then Google has ads have new qualified call conversions. AI is evaluating your phone calls. So this is Search Engine Roundtable. So they have AI qualified call leads use Google AI to evaluate call recordings to determine the actual quality of the conversation. So the call recording setting must be turned on. So you have the ability not to use it to determine the actual quality of the conversation. It looks for intent, customers inquiring about specific services, scheduling a consultation, or showing readiness to purchase. Sounds like a training situation. It does primary signal classification, call recording, and secondary signal call duration, and tertiary signal ad interaction. Important to know, though, if you're using ads, if you turn that on, that there's a whole evaluation process run by AI, which may be accurate and it may not be.
Absolutely, one of those things that your employees should know about as well. You're not being evaluated by your human manager any longer. We are now evaluating your interactions using Google's AI.
Yeah, that's really important actually to tell people. And then there's some more quick stories we have. Google Chrome tab transforming to Gemini with deep search and create images. They're just adding new tabs in Chrome that allow them to add deep search and creating images on there. Google Shopping showing shopping ads with free listing grid. So there's actually ads in the free listing grid, which is odd. Then Google Local Search with video ads. So now you can do local search and add a video to it, which is kind of nice, but I don't know. Like, that's a lot of screen space that when I saw it in the article. So.
Yeah, and the smallest you can make a Google video, I think, is 450 pixels. So yeah, that is a lot of screen space.
And we missed one story, and I thought I put it in here, and I apologize, Jim, if it's not, but. Google is now opening up AI mode. They're opening up a second window with the website in it, which I thought at first might be capturing the website. But from what I read today, it really seems like Google has this new feature in Chrome where you can go split the window in this direction, add this page so it doesn't get, pushed back. I think
That's been
it's
happening to
easy.
me, actually. It's kind of maddening when that
Yeah,
happens.
I turned off the automatic. The automatic is nuts because if you hit the edge of the screen, it'll
It's a
automatically arrange things. Yeah. But you can go to where you do the red, yellow, and green to change the size of the window, and you can pick which layout you want. So I think that's all it's doing. And people confirmed today that they're getting the click-through analytics, and it does look like the page is acting normally. It's just in a Chrome tab that's set to react to the AI mode. So, and that's it. We have two quick closing stories.
This one I think is actually kind of interesting because I think it rephrases the cat and mouse game between hackers and defenders. The Firefox team has been using Well, use Claude Mythos to preview their next iteration of Firefox. This is a stat that they were so amazed by. They scanned one release back in February with Opus 4.6, and it found 22 security fixes. That's 22 problems that were in that iteration, Firefox 148. This week they released Firefox 150, and they ran it through Claude Mythos, looking to find vulnerabilities. Mythos found 271 vulnerabilities in this evaluation. So, the speed at which they went on to say that Mythos didn't find anything that human researchers wouldn't have found themselves, but the number of vulnerabilities it found so quickly put them in a position where at least the Mozilla team is suggesting that the days of zero-day vulnerability are probably numbered. Remembering, of course, we did the story earlier about some nefarious bad guys who now have their hands on
Yeah.
Anthropic's Mythos, so maybe they're not actually numbered. But
Yeah,
I do think that the old cat and mouse game, I think that's over. I think we've gone to a new level.
oh, that's definitely changed. And also the issues with agents being so insecure as a whole new layer. And that's insecure with language, not code. So this Mythos wouldn't find the those necessarily unless there was a code vulnerability as well. But yeah, it's the problem is on the other side of this is the people who get access to Mythos, you can go searching for zero-day vulnerabilities that you may have not found yet. And we know it found 20,000 overnight on systems that were 25 and 30 years old that were thought to be pretty secure. So yeah, you have to be really careful to know both sides of the story. Otherwise, you might over-rely on it and not realize that there are bad guys that have the same power now. We have two superpowers, but both sides have the superpower.
It's going to be interesting.
Oh.
Honest to goodness, the next few months are going to be wildly interesting. Not necessarily
Oh.
safe and secure, but wildly interesting.
I
It's
can't
just,
wait.
there's
Yeah.
that old Chinese curse: "May you live in interesting times."
Yeah,
You
I've been
do.
living in that curse. Yeah. The other thing too is I'm looking forward to DEF CON this year because all this will be there on steroids. So I'll do a report when I come back this year. And then we have a last story. I just thought this was funny. It's Barry Adams. If you're in the industry, especially publishing, you know Barry Adams. And he said a new research paper, what is it, points out the essence of LLM fallacy. So basically, there's a new paper out. This is not the first time we've reported on this issue. We've reported on multiple times. But he just said a warning to people who rely heavily on AI on their day-to-day jobs, you may not be as smart as you think. So basically, it's the same story we've covered before where people who use a large language model think they know more, but when tested, actually know less. But they're more confident that they know more. So.
So is it that they know more, or that the information the large language model is giving them is more correct? That they know
No,
more
no, no.
personally,
They don't know
or
more. They think they know more. They actually know less.
yeah, it
Because.
reminds me of that old Bertrand Russell quote, where he envisions the intelligent it's full of doubt and the idiotic full of self-confident. I'm bastardizing the quote terribly, but
But
yeah,
yeah, there's two
we
reasons
live of
for
that
that.
age.
Errors in information. Also, you're not doing the deep diving yourself. So you're not learning as you go. You're just reading. So like if you and I do research, we do deep dives into the topic and we learn as we go. And you don't learn as you go when you're just reading a model. That's something they've also shown in the studies. So yeah. So I just thought it was interesting. It's a good paper. It's out there on oh, I can't
I
remember the
think
name of the site.
he threw this on a in a conversation with Barry over at Rusty Brick. So yeah, anyway.
The paper, real quick, is the LLM fallacy, misattribution, and AI-assisted cognitive workflows. If you're looking
There you
for
go.
it, there you go.
Okay,
So,
we got to get out of here.
yeah, we do, yeah.
Well, it's been a long week. On behalf of Christine Jackson from Safe the Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. Friend, it's been crazy, scary weirdness out there right now. Be kind and patient and really cool with each other. Rank well, be well, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.